This is the Adam Gold Show.
We got Hurricanes hockey tonight at PNC Arena. Dennis has to do a pregame show in less than 5 hours. I hope he's ready. Who knows? Maybe even our friend Chip Patterson will be in attendance. I saw him at playoff games in years past. We'll get to that, I'm sure. But we have to talk about parity in college football, because that's what Nick Saban wants. He wants parity. And I didn't know how he was spelling it. I just figured, listening to the comments, that it was P-A-R-O-D-Y. But no, he wants a level playing field in college sports. Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast moderator. What's wrong with Nick? Is it too hot already in Alabama?
Is he losing his edge? I think we got to ask these questions, right? I think that everybody else should fade Alabama, and I'll keep picking them. How about that?
That's fine. What's wrong? What's wrong with him?
Well, I think that there is probably some of this. I say that jokingly, but we've been running the how many more years do you think Nick Saban will coach? It is significant not only for the timeline that we put on the Alabama dynasty, but also for the massive moves that have been made by Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher, by LSU with Brian Kelly, where Georgia's just trying to continue to load up. There is a little bit of the SEC looking around and understanding there will be a day that Nick Saban is not the head coach of Alabama football. And, you know, I think that Nick Saban even himself is probably trying to do that thing where, you know, hey, listen, I cashed in on all of this uneven playing field. And you know what? Before I leave, let's just make it more parity again, because then I get to be the greatest of all time. No one ends up being able to win quite like I was able to win. I think that Nick Saban probably the thing that is going to end up driving him out of college football is going to be when he just his next couple teams are going to be big time transfer teams. If that doesn't work, then I could see him doing the almost like Roy Williams, where it's like, I don't want to do any of this anymore, because he ran off what, 3 or 4 star wide receivers,
right?
And you know, he decided he was going to go right back to the transfer portal, get Georgia's best wide receiver, get Louisville's best wide receiver, get Georgia Tech's best running back. And I think that we could see Alabama just do that for a couple more years, and then we get to have that moment. So I think Nick Saban is looking at what football is going to be after he's around and after he's at Alabama. And, of course, Nick Saban would like it if someone doesn't come and take over and win at the level Alabama did.
So it sounds to me like Nick Saban is anti-parity.
He is anti anybody catching him in the record book.
Did he think that – first of all, We could sit here all day long and talk about money. Like, you and I have had these conversations about how to make the college football playoff more fair, and the real reason why we're top heavy in college football has been that the best players keep going to the same schools. It's just that easy. Like, there is no salary cap in the NFL in college football, so Alabama can get the best players, and Ohio State can get the best players, and Clemson and Georgia and whomever, and ultimately we have the same 4 or 5 teams all year long. We don't have a college draft of high school players, so these guys are all going to the same place. So there wasn't parity before. Nick was fine with that. Now that there might be a mechanism, and I'm not in any way admitting that we do have one, but we might have a mechanism that is leveling the playing field, meaning name, image, and likeness money is spreading the talent around. Now Nick doesn't like it?
Hey, listen, you know when you had more parity? When you named your national champions by the AP poll.
You did.
You know, like, there's no way that we would have Colorado, Washington, Georgia Tech make it through a 4, much less expanded 12-team playoff. The college football playoff only further guarantees that the teams with the best players end up winning the national championship. Uh-huh. The idea of having this season where less talented players were able to band together and close the gap with the, you know, the big bad powerhouse, that might have been possible if you went undefeated and winning the national championship just meant impressing 62 riders. But with the college football playoff system, we are only further going to guarantee that we're not going to have that sweet little Cinderella story in college football.
Yeah, it's so easy to see. But I am curious about how Saban reacts. Like, it almost seems like he doesn't want to adapt. Mike Bray, he should be the voice of college sports, of college coaches. When Mike Bray said, look, we're compensated really well. Suck it up and figure it out.
You know what? Hayes Permar and I were discussing this, and that is the voice of somebody who is a high school teacher. You know, like Mike Bray at DeMatha was coaching basketball, but right. He also probably had 4 history classes a day that he had to deal with. And so for him to go from there to where he is now, he's like, are you kidding me? You know, we get paid like this and right. We don't have to have 4 classes. You know, that's us. We're really missing the old teacher as a coach, and not in the sense of, you know, coaches just aren't teachers like they used to be. I mean, no, actual educators.
Right.
I want my coaches to actually be former high school teachers and be able to have that experience. Because I do think that there's some relatability that is totally lost in coaching because of just sort of the modern industry of the ladder climbing, jumping from job to job. You go to the conventions, you make your alliances. You hope that you end up getting the call from your buddy when your buddy gets the job.
Right.
Like it is very much... is very much lost. You know, there are great coaches, and I believe a lot of these coaches do pursue on a player by player and season by season basis a lot of those values that they preach. I believe that there are a lot that get in it for big air quotes right reasons.
Uh-huh.
But I also think that it's impossible to ignore, just as the money has gone up and the competition has gone up between these coaches, you might lose some relatability from way coaches used to be.
Yeah, I think I saw Nick Saban was the only coach last year to get paid by the school in excess of $9 million. And I would argue this. I've always said this about coaching salaries, that there are no coaches who are accurately paid, that every coach is either underpaid or overpaid. And I think Nick Saban falls into the underpaid category because of what he brings to the university. They can't possibly pay him his value.
Well, I like using coaches' salaries as a way to justify some of the absurd NIL numbers that come out there, because you can just go right to pros. Like, let's talk about what market value is, because, you know, the best players on an NFL roster are making, you know, way more than the assistant coaches.
Sure.
And so if the assistant coaches are making $1 million, well, then, yeah, Bryce Young is absolutely worth that absurd number that you want to throw out there. You know, let's take it local. I would say that Devin Leary is probably worth a number that exceeds the value that's being paid to a couple assistant coaches if we were just going to talk market mm-hmm. value in terms of how much a player might mean to a team's success and versus how much that assistant coach might mean to a team's success.
All right, there's a couple of things I want to get to, and I want to leave some time for you and I to talk about the PGA Championship, which starts tomorrow. But you brought up Devin Leary and NC State, and let me just ask this. Because I've seen just a number of it's way too early, and I'm not trying to, criticize anybody about this. Do you have a scenario in your head where NC State is pushing for a college football playoff spot?
No, I don't think so. Not a realistic one. You know, as I'm going through and kind of stacking up the teams into the tiers versus what you can accomplish, I think that my big NC State angle is, and you know, so hyper local, but I get to flex this just because, I don't know, I've lived in Raleigh, you know,
right.
my entire life, and I've got the proximity on this one. But I think it's that 10 win thing. I think that, you know, especially with the way the Holiday Bowl was canceled, to be able to, for the second time in program history, go and win double digit games, I think that that is something that can be viewed as, I think winning, competing for the ACC Atlantic is something that is viewed as realistic. But that there is a difference between the kind of teams that I think are competing for a division championship versus the ones that are real college football playoff. Now, there is the argument. It's like, well, if you're competing for a division championship, then you're a conference title contender. If you're a conference title contender, then you're in the mix for the college football playoff. Yeah, but. I mean, the Pittsburgh Panthers and Wake Forest can come and tell you that,
right.
you know, you can be out there and playing in Charlotte for a conference championship, but also know that on that day in December, you're really not in the mix for the playoff. You know, Utah is a team that I think is competing for a division title, maybe a conference championship, but I'm not really calling them a college football playoff contender. So that's kind of the difference here, and that's sort of where I've got NC State placed right now. But let's not get it twisted. When I'm going back to the 10-win thing, the non-conference schedule is cake. You know, that's a don't screw it up. And again, at ECU, like, there is all of that that does need to be acknowledged. But if on paper, you stack this up and NC State is going to be a significant favorite in all four, well, depending on where Texas Tech is at that point in the season. But that is an incredibly manageable non-conference schedule. And so there's four wins right there. And guess what? I think NC State can go 6-2 in ACC play, maybe better. Well, there's six wins right there. So for me, I'm not putting NC State in that college football playoff conversation, though I do think that there's no one on their schedule that they should look at and think, you know, we are in trouble right here. But still, the way that college football goes, it's really, really hard to go 12-0. And I think an ACC representative in the college football playoff probably needs to be undefeated, certainly undefeated in conference play. Maybe Clemson can take a loss to Notre Dame. But again, that would be putting things up to chance.
Two more quick things about this. One, if NC State is 6-0, that would take them through the game against Florida State. And at that point, it's going to turn up to 11 right here in Raleigh, because with Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and Wake Forest, and Boston College all in Raleigh, and then all you have left is trips to Louisville and North Carolina. I'm just saying, it could be a very interesting October and November
but
here.
But 6-0 is giving them, like, that's the...
I know.
The NC State winning the ACC, something that I do think is realistic, also is a scenario where Clemson has taken, you know, like, that everybody's taken some losses, that it was a season similar to 2021, a season where NC State was very much in the mix for an ACC Atlantic Division title, but, you know, lost to Wake Forest narrowly in a frustrating way, I certainly acknowledge. But that's the, like, NC State gets brought into that picture with Clemson, you know, maybe even taking multiple losses, having a season much more similar to what we saw from them last year.
Look, all I am interested in is the thought experiment when we get, if we can get to that point. I think it will be one of the most hysterical things to experience from the inside, if the Wolfpack can be in that. Look, to me, it's about their offensive line. If their offensive line is good, I think the Wolfpack are going to be in it. Now, real quick about this, because you said the non-conference schedule is cake. I don't disagree. I think that it is built to have a great record and maybe get to maybe even a New Year's Six bowl game. But could it
Which
be,
is fine. Like, that's good.
Could it
you
be, sh- though?
You should be building that kind of schedule to be able to have that kind of season.
You're speaking to the guy who keeps talking about that, and that stupid ACC teams keep scheduling above their pay grade, and they shouldn't do that. Look at how the SEC schedules. The bare freaking minimum. That's how you build ranking equity. But it could this be something, you know, if we could dream, that holds them back?
That only becomes an issue if they're like a one loss team.
Right.
And we see them as a one loss team being largely discounted or discredited because of the non-conference strength of schedule numbers. Sure. Yeah. Like, that's, look, you would love to be snubbed from the college football playoff. You know, like, right. go talk to Jimbo Fisher about what he was able to take in terms of, like, real, you know, like, I don't think that I love the momentum is or isn't real when talking about games, but in something like college football and recruiting, where it's much more like stock prices, like, momentum's real. Texas A&M being number 5 in the college football playoff rankings at the end of the season means that they can be like, no, we were right there. That should have been us. And that is something that is great, because you can't be held accountable for it, and you can sell the heck out of it. So it would be awesome for the overall health of a program that has not been in that kind of position to be the first one out, because honestly, that might be a better outcome than getting drubbed in the first game in the playoffs.
Well,
anyway,
that's my question. This would be a great who you got, or would you rather on Friday? Would you rather be snubbed and have an argument, or get beat in the semifinal by Ohio State by 41?
I mean, your only goal is the Cincinnati the Cincinnati plan, which is just like, okay, we're just going to like play safety. We're going to do everything but get pounded. We're going to run the ball, and we're just going to make Alabama run the ball. We all watched that game and knew it was over midway through the first half.
Yeah.
But at the same time, final score only shows up like 24-0 or 24-3. Looks a little bit more manageable than, and maybe not as lopsided as it was.
All right, real quick. They're going to vote today. They may have already voted to get rid of the rule. That means you either have to play a full round robin or have divisions to have a college football or, conference championship game in football. Obviously, about time that we got rid of stupid rules. How quickly do you think the ACC will act here?
2023 would be the earliest, right?
Next year, right?
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to judge the general tone of a lot of what's coming out of the ACC league office and ACC leadership, which is patience. You know, doesn't it always seem like, we'll see on that. Well, it's almost as though everybody in college, I do actually feel this way. There's way too much patience and let's put this off. You keep talking about how this seismic change in college sports, you think it's going to happen sooner than a lot of people believe. And I almost wonder that the way everyone's like, yeah, come talk to me in a year or so. Let's get a few more of these meetings in and let's see what this looks like. No one wants to commit to the future of their football scheduling until they know what the future of the football system is. And with that in flux, a lot of them are really passing on making big changes to what they already have.
I think the ACC is going to do it right away. As soon as they can do it, I think they're going to do it.
Do you think they're going to change the schedules though? Or do you think like this is the debate, is are they going to blow up the helmet grid and the rotations that they have, you know, set up all the way out to 2036? And are you going to already start over being able to run through not just standings where you're going to be able to just take the top two teams, but also really mixing and matching the teams that they're playing?
Yeah, and not only do I think that, I think the ACC is going to take scheduling to a manual place too, where they're going to do like what the Big 12 does, which is manipulate the schedule to backload it. So you've got what they believe to be contending teams with soft early schedules to build up, record equity and then get us to November. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's number 4 versus number 7.
That makes too much sense. No, I don't like what you're doing. You're making way too much sense.
That's
making talking about what's going to be good for the ACC and being able to reverse what has been, you know, ultimately proven to be a little bit of a shaky reputation. Bad reputation to the BCS era. That's defined by going 2-13 in BCS games. That's a horrid record. Mildly changed as Florida State and Clemson run off a couple of national championships between 2013 and 2018. Nice little 5-year run. Lamar goes to get the Heisman Trophy too. But, you know, it's we've seen in the last couple of years, it's gotten a little bit more dicey in terms of how much respect is coming the ACC's way from that sort of national voter college football playoff selection committee group.
No question. And look, the SEC deserves it because you look at the NFL draft and they're just, basically half SEC player. All right, when we come back, Chip Patterson will tell us how many strokes Tiger Woods will win the PGA Championship by. That's what we're going to do next. PGA Championship starts tomorrow. By this time tomorrow, Tiger Woods will be better or worse, Chip Patterson, than 11 under par by this time tomorrow. He'll be on like 14 tomorrow.
Yeah. And he'll be closing in on a course record even at Southern Hills Country Club. Yeah. I don't think so. I think that this is what's cool about this year's PGA Championship. Tiger Woods playing takes up so much oxygen. It's kind of worth it because it truly is amazing that he is not just playing golf, but playing golf at a level where he is competing in major championships. It's incredible. Yeah. And we are all going to be drawn to it. And I think he makes the cut, but I do think he has an earlier tee time on Saturday, which, and at that point, we'll be able to start to turn our attention to a dozen fascinating storylines. I mean, you know, we are so well stocked with talent and intrigue and stars in the game of golf outside of Tiger Woods, but Tiger Woods is still all I can think about. And Tiger Woods is all anybody can think about. So I think that it'll play out really well for the PGA Championship, that will be all Tiger Thursday, all Tiger Friday. He'll make the cut, but he won't really be in the mix. And then we'll be able to look up and be like, oh, what if Jordan Spieth, yeah. What if this completes his return? And you're going to look up and you're going to think like, geez, we can't count John Rahm out. He's only two strokes off the lead and yeah. He's been playing as good as anybody else in the world. Like, oh my gosh, wait, what if Victor Hovland gets it done here? The former Oklahoma State Cowboy yep. getting it done in Tulsa. Like, that's where I hope that, well, I mean, I hope if we're going to say what we hope, I hope Tiger Woods is in the mix to win too. But my expectation is that the way that we take this tournament in, the way we talk about it, the way we watch it, is going to be all Tiger early. And then as we get into Saturday, we'll start to pivot and have, just based on the way that some of these top players in the game are playing and what I think is going to bring out a really stacked leaderboard there at Southern Hills, I think that we've got a ton of interesting potentials when it comes to the winner and sort of what that could mean.
Yeah, it's interesting. Patrick Cantlay, who has a win this year at, where was it, Heritage, right? At mm-hmm. Harbortown. He beat Spieth in the playoff, right, at Harbortown?
Right.
Nobody has talked about him as being a potential winner of this tournament, and I don't know why. Cantlay certainly finished the year a year ago as good as anybody. Scottie Scheffler is the odds-on favorite to win every week now, because Scheffler, once he figured out how to win, apparently hasn't figured out how to not win, which is really good. But I'm with you, Chip, if I could just fanslate. I hope Tiger doesn't run away and hide with this championship. I hope Tiger lets everybody stay in it. That's the way I'm fanslating that. All right, let me ask you about – this is not about wanting Ricky Fowler to win. Were you at all surprised by Fowler's very open flirtation with the LIV Golf Series Tuesday at his press conference?
It a little, but I would say the first thing is we never heard him as part of the group that was coming out. What we laugh about. John Rahm said he pledged his fealty.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Don't pledge your fealty to a tour. That's just silly. Keep your fealty. Yeah, come on, have some respect. You're a major championship winner. But we didn't hear Ricky Fowler doing the Rory McIlroy, the John Rahm, the Tiger Woods, the Justin Thomas, the Jordan Spieth. Like, we didn't see him fall in line with some of those other stars in terms of being vocal and, you know, coming out and sort of admonishing this effort to be able to create a rival tour and offering their support and their commitment to the PGA Tour. So he wasn't on my – it's not like I'm surprised because he's gone back on his, you know, word. And, you know, if we think about what kind of profile we expected from the golfers they would target, we thought about ones that were, you know, aging out. And it's a worthy debate on Ricky Fowler, someone who's still, you know, his face and his energy and, you know, his style, all of it still screams youth. But I mean, he's been on this tour for a pretty long time. But whether he's on the back end of his own professional tour, at least in terms of being a real competitor to win, that is absolutely a worthy debate. So how about this? He is a surprisingly good fit
for
some of the golfers that they were really going out and looking for.
He's actually exactly what that tour needs, is an attractive face of their league, if you will. Here's my curiosity. So much of Fowler has been built on, endorsements and his being one of the faces of the sport without really having their credentials as a player. He does have a player's championship, so you can't take that away from him. And he was a big part of Ryder Cup teams and all of that. He doesn't have a lot of wins on his resume, but he is that kind of an attraction that this tour needs. And the problem for Ricky is that, you know, he talked about yesterday in terms of competition, except that Ricky's not competitive right now. So he could talk about competition all he wants. He wouldn't be interested in that tour if he was competitive here.
So oh, without a doubt.
It's running from competition. And that's what Eamon Lynch for Golf Week wrote about it incredibly well, that tour needs guys who are essentially washed up but still names, which is why Sergio Garcia is going to go, why Lee Westwood wants to play there, Adam Scott. These guys aren't week in, week out factors anymore.
And I mean, and they're very, very happy to go and compete, you know, with guaranteed checks,
yeah,
too. Right. I mean, that's the trying to sell the Super League. It means that you want people to take checks. And this is sort of the Super League concept, which, of course, is, what the LIV Golf Tour is kind of going for right here. You need to be willing to not win. And like you said, having people that can be attractions while also not winning is exactly what they want to be able to have. So I'm very curious to see sort of, where it continues to go. It hasn't yet hit a point where I'm going to consider it any more attractive to my own eyes than the USFL,
Right. I'm with you on that.
Is it the only thing that we've got going? Is there not another Seinfeld rerun on TBS right now? Okay, fine. Like, let's go and check this out. But
by the way, we're 3 weeks away from the event. We don't know where it's going to be on television.
But it is Turner. Isn't the deal always with Turner? Like, it could float between TBS, TNT, and
Do we
True
know
TV?
That the LIV series is on Turner?
Oh, you mean, I got you. No, I've got no idea. I thought you said the event. I heard the match.
Oh, the match. No, I could. Oh, gosh. Are you at all interested in Brady and Rodgers versus Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes? I'd rather watch them play cards.
Than golf?
Yeah.
I want to see Mahomes and Allen. Listen, Rodgers has been part of that pro-am circuit for a long time. We've obviously gotten a lot of dose of Brady recently. But I'm curious to see what Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen look like out there. I mean, I'll take highlights, right? I might be able to take in as much as I want without watching it, but I'm consider me mildly interested. How about this? Consider me more interested in the match than necessarily tuning into the first LIV Golf event.
Oh, I will. Yeah, but again, we don't even know if the LIV Golf series is going to be on television. As an aside, as we kind of close, and I'll ask you for your pick. And I have an interesting pick for my winner here. I am most curious about the players that we haven't heard about yet who either had signed contracts or were about to sign contracts. We're going to know. That list will come out. And
it'll be a trickle, though. I mean, someone will assemble it, but the golf does a good enough job of protecting information it doesn't want out, better than any other profession.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tour. That's gonna get out. You're not gonna have Phil Mickelson, essentially, be the shield for 10, 12 other players. It ain't gonna happen. We're gonna find out. We're gonna find out the guys who are on that list. All right, who's your winner?
Victor Hovland. I mean, we're going back to Oklahoma. The guy was one of the best NCAA golfers, and he absolutely has the chops to be able to win. I think it's going to be an absolutely stellar. Like, you got to be a big boy to get out there. And we might have a couple surprise names on the leaderboard, but I think the winner is going to be a legit star. And I think that for Hovland, obviously, it would be a breakthrough win. But his game, his form, what he's already done in terms of competing, even in major championships, he would not be out of left field at all.
PGA championships generally come down to who are like the best players of that particular year. I like Max Homa.
Oh, that'd be so awesome. I'll take it.
Plus 5,000 right now if you wanted to put a bargaining chip on it. Chip Patterson, you are the best, my friend. We'll talk next week, sir.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 Podcast Moderator. Dennis won one of his three wagers yesterday. I didn't win any of mine. It's time to go forward. Forget about yesterday. Move on to today.
Place your bets. Place your bets. Here we are. I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Yeah. Okay, you can own me. I owe you one.
All right, Dennis Cox, you actually got up off the mat with your Tampa Bay Lightning.
I did.
Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Gabriel Landeskog let me down.
He though. Did?
He had an assist on the first goal, though he did not score it.
I got it into overtime, but I could not get St. Louis across the finish line, and I lost all the other stuff. So where do you want to go? You start.
Canes Rangers. Canes minus 1.5 goals, plus 150. Give it to me.
Canes minus 1.5?
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. I appreciate your confidence, sir. I'm staying away from the Hurricanes. I don't need any extra need on the Hurricanes on the Hurricanes game. We're going to start in the WNBA.
There you go.
Dennis Cox. That's right, the WNBA. We're starting. I am an unabashed Sue Bird fan. Give me the Seattle Storm at home, outright, over the Chicago Sky at plus 147.
All right.
Can't believe I just did that.
You did it. It's on record now. I'm going to stick with the NHL. Give me the Calgary Flames, also a minus a goal and a half, plus 150.
Calgary.
Minus a goal and a half.
All right. I'm actually going to go the other way on that game and just simply give me Edmonton to win tonight at plus 135.
I actually see it at plus 140.
Oh, I'll take it at plus 140.
There you go.
Do I have 147?
No, I'm sorry.
No, you do not. You do not have plus 147. All right, sir, you're up.
Mavericks, Warriors tonight. Mavericks money line 185, plus 185.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Are they going to keep going on?
Why not?
I mean, why? Exactly.
Taking all.
Why
all,
not?
All underdog bets here.
Very nice. All right, I'm going to go to the PGA Championship. We got to get in now. I picked Max Homa with Chip Patterson.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go Max Homa here for this purpose. I'm going to take Joaquin Niemann to top 10 this week at plus 325.
All right.
Joaquin Niemann to top 10 at plus 325 on the money line. Do you want to know the overall damage in WannaBet? You are at minus 1860.
I stink.
Well, I'm at plus 398.
You can blame Hayes.
I am not really. I've been losing more than Hayes did, I think. Although Hayes did lose a fair amount.
He lost a lot of units for you,
he
sir.
He did. Because he kept taking favorites.
Yeah.
If you're going to take favorites, you better win. There's no value in taking favorites. We're all bad at this.
Yeah.
We're trying to prove a point to you people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not good at this. The idea, and I've always tried to do this, the whole goal is to be consistent.
Oh, I'm very good at
right?
that. Right? Very
and
good at that.
And if we can achieve consistency, people can notice a pattern and mm-hmm. go the other way.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I've lost like 6 in a row. So these are all going to lose. Go the other way.
This is the Adam Gold Show.